Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is poker humorist Max Shapiro, who wrote a column called Read 'em and Laugh for many years in Card Player magazine. Before we talk to Max, Richard and I are going to go to our mailbag again and answer some of the questions that we've gotten from you, our listeners. We actually appreciate these questions. Many of them go on our list to, we'll ask this to Russell Fox next time he's on. He's our tax guy. Or we'll ask this, put this on the list to ask Bob Nersessian next time he's on. But the ones we can answer, that's what we're doing today. All right. A player says he recently had his first back off playing blackjack, and he's wondering if you would have done anything differently if you were in his shoes, and how long you'd wait to return to this casino. He was spreading 1x3 to 2x25, 50 max table. Most other players were betting 3 a hand or 10. Immediately after sitting down, he went up about $450 in 3 shoes. After each shoe, he cashed out a black and put it in his pocket to not draw attention to his money. He played extra aggressively, wonging out at a true zero, either by pretending to be on his phone or in one instance staring at the table, just sitting at the table for about 20 hands. All was going well when I took an insurance on a 13. The dealer asked me, "What's the count?" My response was, "What do you mean?" He replied, "The only way you would insure that is if you were counting." I responded that I always insure a bet of 15 or more. He said, "That will be for surveillance to decide." He continued to play. A new dealer took over, and sure enough, 2 shoes later, I turned to see a short woman ask me to cash out. She pulled me aside with a very large security guard and said, "We have determined your counting, and we will let you cash out if you show ID." Seeing as how this was an Indian casino, and I was moving out of state in 3 days, I smiled, said okay, and showed her my ID. It was a very pleasant back-off. They escorted him to the cage, said he could play any game besides blackjack. He took his money and drove home. As an aside, he'd played 4 hours this night, but in total had logged 45 hours at this casino, one time playing 20 hours over 2 days without so much as a question. So he wants to know from Richard, would you have left earlier or continue to play? Also, would and also when did you go back to this casino? Go for it, Richard.
Well, A, if you're going to spread $3 to 2 hands by 25, of course they're going to realize you're counting cards. I mean, that's how they know you're counting cards, is you have a big bet spread. But that's what you have to do to win by counting cards. So you should just assume that wherever you play, eventually you're going to get barred. And it doesn't matter how small you bet. They have, you know, people in OSN and in the Griffin book for spreading nickels. I hear people say, "Oh, well, it won't matter because I'm betting so small." Well, you're wrong. They just care that you're winning. It doesn't matter how little you're winning. Two things I would have definitely done differently. One, if you color up and get a black chip and take it off the table, you're not making it look like you have less money. They keep track of those $100 chips very carefully, so they know exactly how much money you have. So I definitely would not do that. If you're going to try to squirrel away money, you do it surreptitiously, and you would do it with some of the green chips, not the black ones. But you probably won't get away with that either, because you're probably, it sounds like, the only player there that has any green chips. So, I mean, you're in a tiny little dump and sounds like you're the biggest player in the place. So, you know, and the other thing is, I mean, for the stakes that you're betting, I guess giving up your ID was fine. But, you know, for a professional, they're better off just heading to the door, saying, I'm leaving. Don't try to cash out the chips. Just get out the door and don't give up your name. But again, for the stakes you're playing, maybe it didn't matter. Maybe you won't end up in OSN because of this, or you might. And then we'll all laugh to see somebody in OSN for spreading $3 to two hands of 25. But it does happen. So, yeah, I mean, that's it. It's just part of the game. You should just assume it's going to happen, and no game is going to last forever.
All right. I have nothing to add on that, other than that happened.
Oh, wait. You know what? I do want to add one other thing. Don't think that the solution to this is to suddenly play cover and have less of a bet spread or change making the right play to try to fool them. No, your edge is too small. Stick it in their face and do it until they bar you.
Okay. And by the way, that is not the way to do it in video poker. Sticking it in their face would be playing the highest game in the house for hours and hours and hours and getting lots of W2Gs, and they will back you off fairly quickly. Okay. This is a player who is a poker player. He says he has no video poker knowledge, and he wants to try to pick up some extra EV to learn video poker. He says he's sufficiently bankrolled and sufficiently motivated to learn how much time, and whatever time it takes to do it, he would do it. He wants to know how much time he'd have to invest to go from a know-nothing player to a player with a decent positive expectation. He says he's a pretty serious non-professional poker player. He has a day job but plays and studies poker very seriously. He recently stumbled on our podcast and has listened to a few episodes, which has piqued his interest in AP video poker. If he has some edge, he could see him playing video poker here and there, mostly while waiting for his traditional poker seat, but maybe also to earn some casino comps. However, in addition to being limited by the number of hours he's likely to play, he's only in the casino 50 times a year, he's also very likely only to play at one casino next to him, so his game selection would be limited. There's an 8-5 bonus poker game that returns less than 99.2. We'll use round numbers. And he wouldn't be going to other casinos. He'd just be playing that game. Since he'd be playing with otherwise idle time, he wouldn't need much EV to justify playing once he got up to speed, but he would want some expectation to becoming a plus EV player in order to invest the time in learning. So he says he has a low six-figure bankroll, not worried about committing the necessary upfront investments. Now he wants to know how many hours he would have to spend before he's profitable. Could I give him any do's and don'ts? All right, a lot here. Knowing the game is 8-5 bonus isn't near enough information to determine if you have an edge at all. How much does the slot club pay? How much are the mailers? And what does it take to get them? If it's a dollar game or lower, you're virtually never going to play enough to earn anything. If it's a $5 game or higher, or perhaps something like $2.05 play, you do know you're going to get W2Gs. And they have real tax implications. You should check out the Russell Fox interview on this show on June 21st of this year to learn how W2Gs have affected things this year compared to last year. Part of W2Gs, of course, is giving up your ID. Now, if you're a poker player, maybe this is no big deal. But some of our listeners are table game players, and for them, this might possibly be a showstopper. If there's nobody to ask about the slot club, promotions, or cash in the mail, what you need to do is find out for yourself. Play $100,000 coin in over one day. Sit back and see what comes in the mail. It may take a few months for the mailers to come. They may never come. But once you have this information, you'll have enough to know whether or not it's a good game. Now, it's going to cost you, round numbers, $850 in expected value. Your actual mileage will vary, but you'll see what you get. Now, to learn the game, especially if you're a raw beginner, you're going to need video poker software and the winner's guide to Jacks or Better. The Dancer Daily Winner's Guide includes 8-5 bonus poker. They are not the same game, but they're similar. Those are the only two common games where two pair pays two for one. And so both are available at bobdancer.com. Another thing you're going to find out playing that one-shot deal at $100,000 is, do you like the game? Some people do. Some people don't. And about you, I don't have a clue. Richard, anything to add?
Yeah, I think $100,000 coin in on your very first play, I think there are not many people who can do that or should do that. I don't think you should jump into something where you're playing $25 or $50 a spin the first time you go out to play. And I think a more reasonable thing would be to put in $10,000 or $20,000 coin in and, you know, see what you get. I doubt that you're actually ever going to be able to get positive on this game. And the other thing that you have to take into consideration is if you are using a player's card in the poker room, this could really screw you in that they base what they give you in the mail on your average daily theoretical, and they're making nothing on you in the poker room. And so I think that's going to hurt you in terms of the video poker. Now, on the other hand, if it sounds like this casino is very close to your house, and if you like the restaurants there, well, then playing 8-5 bonus poker is probably going to earn you comps, and you can go to those restaurants in a much cheaper cost of EV than it would be paying cash, but you're giving up variance to do it. But again, at least you will, if you go and do that and put in 10,000 coin in or 20,000 coin in, as Bob said, you'll find out whether you like playing the game, because, you know, some people play and go, oh, I hate this, like myself included. So, those are my thoughts.
Very good. Let's go on to a game more up Richard's alley. And the question is about the legality of player collusion in casino carnival games. For example, when using the MACK count in Caribbean Stud, the James Gross gene describes in Exhibit CAA, would it be considered cheating for a team of players to use discrete verbal and physical signals to communicate and track hand compositions to gain an advantage? The listener's primary concern is that this strategy would legally be quite different from signaling whole card information from one position to another on the table. This listener doesn't believe it's the same level of spooking, but the advantage the team would realize using this form of collusion would not be the result of casino error or sloppy dealers. Also, if a casino were to observe players openly sharing hand composition information at a table, they would probably inform players this is against the rules. For this reason, he questions whether or not this collusion would be considered cheating or not. Now I'm going to throw this one to Richard, other than to say that it started out talking about being very discreet in the signals, and then at the end he's talking about the casinos picking off those signals, which means you aren't that being that discreet or competent in passing the signals. But that being said, it's all yours, Richard.
Okay, so I'm not a lawyer and I don't play one on the internet, but do I think it would be illegal? Well, that's not the right question. The question is, would I play this game and be worried about the legality? The answer is, I have played games like this. I do not worry about the legality. And I just want to point out, you said you don't think it would be to the level of spooking. Now, the conventional wisdom out there on the internet is every time somebody mentions spooking, people go, that's illegal. And I have yet to have heard of any single case of anyone actually being convicted of cheating for spooking. Now spooking has pretty much gone away since the mid-80s in the United States. But prior to that, I never heard of anybody convicted of cheating for spooking. So maybe it's illegal, but as far as I know, it was never tested. Same thing with collusion. Maybe it's illegal, but it certainly has never been tested. And my experience with playing games like this is the casinos are paranoid about games they don't understand. So when we were playing a game like this, and the casino had no idea that we were passing information, but as soon as players started winning, the casino came down and started saying, you can't show each other your cards. You can't show each other your cards. And we all said, we're not showing each other our cards. But, you know, there were multiple calls back and forth to surveillance. All of our signals were, as I say, we were not showing each other our cards to pass the information. And they did not pick off our signals, but they were just so paranoid about people winning on a game that they didn't really understand that they ended up putting three bosses around the table to watch it, and we just realized we weren't going to be able to win any money. So now you might find a casino that is cool, but these are really difficult plays, and to me they're not really worthwhile because usually it requires six people to be on the table. These need to be skilled players, and they need to do this operation smoothly, passing information, and then you're chopping it six ways. So, you know, to me, these are just not very worthwhile games to pursue, even though the edge can be quite large on some of them. But the legality, it's not something I would worry about. Now, you know, this game, or one of these games, was hugely popular in Russia before the casinos were taken out there. You know, I might be a little more paranoid if I were trying to play it in Moscow, but yeah, but in the United States, no.
In the news recently, Richard, it was saying that Japan is going to be opening up full-fledged casinos relatively soon. Do you think you and a group of your buddies are going to fly to Tokyo or somewhere like that and hit them when they open?
Well, first of all, I read within the last couple of days they don't expect a casino to open until 2025. And I'm officially retired. But I used to do production shows in Japan from Las Vegas, dance shows. And they had underground casinos, or they still have underground casinos in Tokyo. And I asked the owner of one of the theaters that I was doing a show for if he would take me take me to them. And he said, you know, white people were not allowed, basically. Actually, any non-Japanese people were not allowed. So I do not think that Caucasians will be able to win much in a Japanese casino. Now, if you're using a Japanese big player, that might be another story. So I don't have any plans right now to go, but I'm sure that many of my friends will go. And, you know, we'll see what happens. Never say never. I do think it'll be a gold mine. I do think it'll be not just for the casino owners, but I think some players will get very wealthy over there.
That's 7 years away. You have plenty of time to unretire and retire a number of times between now and then.
That's true. Yeah.
I'm in the middle of teaching a video poker series of classes at the South Point. And on a regular basis, players come up to me and say, Bob, I only want to learn one game. What is the best game to play in Las Vegas, and where should I play? Generally, they don't like my answer. My answer is, I write about games that I don't mind you knowing about. I don't write about the games that I do mind you knowing about. If there are games in Las Vegas that will not survive extra players. The number of players there now, which is sometimes just me, is low enough that the game can survive. If the word gets out that this is a good game, then the game will not survive. Also, the people who come up and ask me the questions will say, you know, I want to make some money and I'm a quarter player. Well, quarter players play $1.25 a hand on a single line game. Nothing wrong with that, but you're not making any money that way. I truly do not know the best quarter games in Vegas simply because I don't go searching for those. I'm searching for games that will make money for bigger players. And so I couldn't help them, even if I were inclined to give this information away to a stranger. I'm no longer amazed, but Richard and I get these requests all the time of, give me your absolute best information so I don't have to do any work myself to get it.
Yeah, and right.
People have no qualms about asking us those questions. And I have plenty of qualms about giving it. Now, there have been times that I put out an offer of, all right, for $20,000, I will tell you every game I play and why I play it. And I actually did get one taker on that. Somebody had just hit a $100,000 jackpot on a really bad game. But since they just hit a $20,000 or $100,000 jackpot, they figured now they finally knew what this is proof. The world was telling them they knew what they were doing. And so they were ready to go big now. And I started telling them why I was playing and why, and they're just going, they have no clue as to what it means to be a video poker player. They were just playing a bad game and hit a royal.
Wait, did they actually pay you $20,000?
They did. And,
Jesus.
Well, you can call me Bob. It's all right. That's an old joke, and I cannot resist saying it whenever it comes around. And so I told them, and some of them were in other cities, but the information was totally useless to them because the information was only good if you were a strong player. And even though these people had a bankroll now, they were not close to being strong players. All right. How often do you get those questions, Richard?
Oh, all the time.
So now we're going to talk to Max Shapiro. I've been reading his stuff for decades. I get a kick out of listening to Max's stories. So stick around. I'm sure you're going to enjoy this interview. Max Shapiro, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you for inviting me.
See, it's kind of like a family time of the thing, because last week we spoke to Barbara Enright, who claims to have been married to you for a long time.
Yes, we've been together for a long time, and it's a pleasure to be with her and a pleasure to share airwaves with her as well.
All right. So let's get started. How did you get started as a poker player?
Well, during World War II, the National Guards were conscripted into the Army, and for a few years afterwards, in New York formed a New York State Guard. When I was 14, I lied about my age, said I was 17, got into the New York State Guard, and during the monthly drills at the Armory is where I started playing poker. Then I was in the Army. I played some more.
So this was back in the 1940s. This is a while ago.
Yeah, I was back in the 40s, 1946, yeah.
All right. When did you decide that you wanted to be a poker writer?
Well, my background is writing. I have a journalism degree. I've written for several publications, was an editor of one. And then there was some publication in Las Vegas that I heard about, and I asked them to if I could write, and they hired me. I wrote for them for a couple of years. At first, I tried writing strategy and realized I didn't know what I was talking about. And then my natural inclination for humor took over, and I started writing humor stuff, and that's what I've been doing pretty much ever since.
Well, it doesn't matter if you don't think you know what you're talking about. It only matters if the guy who signs the check thinks you know what you don't. He thinks you don't know what you're talking about.
Well, I guess they didn't know. I didn't know what I was talking about, so they accepted my columns. But anyway, they say my natural inclination is feature writing. For example, the 2 years I was editor of this weekly newspaper in Los Angeles, they had an annual writing competition among all the newspapers in Southern California. And both years, I won first place of feature writing in the weekly newspaper category, so that proved to me I knew how to write funny stuff.
Well, good. Your Read 'em and Laugh column in Card Player, how long did that last?
That started about 30 years ago when the magazine was launched, and at first I would write, it was started by June Field, I'd write every three or four issues. Then when Linda Johnson bought it, she asked me to write for every issue, and I panicked, how could I find enough material? But with all the material out there, it was easy. I always had a big backlog of columns. And about, oh, 3 or 4 years ago, they cut back on humor and commentary and cut me every 2 weeks, every 4 weeks. Then they lost a lot of advertising when the online poker wasn't legal anymore. So the magazine got thinner and thinner. So about 3 years ago, they cut way back and haven't written for them since. But it was a long, long time. It was well over 20 years that I was writing for them.
When and are you writing anywhere currently?
No, I'm not. Until about 3 years ago, I was doing a lot of tournament reporting for casinos in Los Angeles and for the World Series of Poker circuit events around the country. I did about, overall, maybe like about 1,000 different write-ups, but that came to an end too. So right now, no, I'm not doing any writing.
In your Read 'em and Laugh, I used to come to Vegas regularly. I lived in Los Angeles, and I was trying to learn to be a blackjack practiced being a blackjack counter and usually came by myself, would always go to the poker room and pick up a free copy of Card Players so I could have something to read while I ate in the buffet. And yours was always the first column I turned to. It was full of characters such as Big Denny, Action Al, Dirty Wally, whole bunch of them. Now, are they based on real people, or it sure seems like they were people I knew from the gambling world?
Well, first of all, the fact that that was the first thing you read shows you have a very good taste in fine literature. But yeah, almost all my characters are based on real people. Big Denny, my main character, who owned the crooked Barstow Card Casino, was based on a guy named Danny London, who I met in a home game at the home of Ralph the Rattler, who was another one of my characters. He was kind of a fierce guy. He weighed, I'm not exaggerating, maybe 500 or 600 pounds, and he eventually passed away at an early age from that weight, where I kept writing about him. And he would fling chips, he would insult players, he would be kind of nasty, but I liked him when we became good friends, and I wrote about him and then how he started, stole the Barstow Card Casino. Dirty Wally, another real guy, an old reprobate who would hang around the casinos with a water bottle in his pocket, seeming to know everybody and everything. And when he died at the age of 91, he was playing at the Hustler Casino, and he won a hand with four aces. Then he wouldn't let go of the cards. When a tournament director came over, he said he was okay, but the director knew he wasn't. They called an ambulance, and he passed away a few hours later. And at my suggestion, he was buried holding four aces in his hand. So most of the people I write about are based on real people.
Now, when you put Big Denny's Casino in Barstow, Barstow is about it's in California. It's about 160 miles south of Las Vegas. You make it sound like backwater USA. Did you ever get any hate mail from proud residents of Barstow, or conversely, fan mail from those Barstonians who think any press is good press?
No, I chose Barstow because it was halfway between L.A. and Vegas, and it has kind of a funny, rustic name. No one ever complained about it, although a number of people have asked me if there was such a thing as a real Barstow Card Casino. And one of my columns, when Saddam Hussein was captured in that spider hole, I wrote a story about how the CIA hired Big Denny to go down into the spider hole and torture and interrogate Saddam by making him play Omaha High Low. Somebody asked me if the story was real, which gives you an idea of the IQ of my readers.
Well, thanks a lot. I read a lot of them.
I have to confess, I used to read your column a lot as well.
Some of them are intelligent. Actually, it was the only thing worth reading.
Now, you sometimes put fellow columnists in your articles who also work for Card Player. Sometimes you wrote about Barbara. Sometimes you wrote about yourself. What did you have to do to be a real person and get mentioned in your column by name?
Well, anybody who wrote something unusual or acted unusual, or it didn't take much. For example, there was another writer and also a movie producer named Raymond Iceberg Citra. And my best line ever was, when I said, "Why is his nickname Iceberg? He's Sicilian. Shouldn't it be Ice Pick?" And he said he got more comments from that than anything he ever wrote about himself. But it's just so much. There's so much color and so much stuff out there in the poker world. It doesn't take much for me to, you know, seize on some issue and write about it. So I've had tons of material along the way. But a lot of material coming from my home poker games. For example, I used to play at the home game of Alan Reed, who was the voice of Fred Flintstone. And whenever he'd lose enough money, which is every time he'd throw us out, I played in a home game with a couple of murderers, Neil and Stuart Woodman. They had a plastics factory in the San Fernando Valley. And I played there a few times. It was kind of nasty. They'd always be complaining about how their father, who they got the business from, was interfering in their business. If they didn't, he didn't leave them alone. They wouldn't let him see their grandchildren, etc. Then right after I quit the game, a story broke how their parents were murdered in their garage or their condominium when they were coming home from Yom Kippur services. At first it was called the Ninja Murders because the eyewitnesses saw the shooters wearing ninja outfits. Later became the Yom Kippur Murders. I knew right away the brothers did it. And sure enough, it turns out they murdered. They wanted their mother murdered so they could collect their insurance because their business was failing. They went to trial, long prison term. They had a book written about it called Blood Money and a TV show with Elliot Gould of the same name. So I met a lot of Werner Klemperer, who was the commandant of the German camp in Hogan's Heroes. I played with him, a lot of people. So I met a lot of colorful people along the way.
Barbara's in the background. Barbara, what did she say?
Yeah, she reminded me of somebody else named Buddha. There's a guy named Robert Gomez.
I'm familiar with Buddha.
Very high stakes player, the biggest pie-gal player in California. He staked Barbara a lot. She gave him a lot of money. She never collected it. He told me that he inherited his money from his South American grandfather. It turned out he was arrested at the Hustler Casino with about 600,000 in chips. It turned out he was a security guard. He had another guard concocted a scheme how he was supposed to be the child of a guy who owned a New York businessman who owned a lot of hundreds of cars. He was very religious. He wanted churchgoers rewarded, so they would go to churches and offer to sell the cars penny on a dollar. They collected about $21 million. Eventually, they were arrested. He's been in prison ever since. It's about 15 or 20 years now. So a lot of interesting people out there.
Did you ever know about the Cavendish West?
The Cavendish what?
Cavendish West. That was a bridge and backgammon club in Los Angeles. It's actually where I grew up gambling-wise, probably playing 15,000 hours from the mid-70s to the early 90s. The characters in your writings basically hung out at the Cavendish West as well, different names. But we had our cheats. We had our know-it-alls. We had our players who were hygienically challenged. So whoever you wrote about, I knew somebody from the Cavendish West who could have been your model. I suspect that would be true of any gambling venue or possibly any PTA or something, just any group of human beings. You're always going to have these people. But I felt very much like I knew your characters.
Yeah, I've heard about the Cavendish Club, but I don't know much about it. Yeah, hygienically challenged, that would be Dirty Wally, who never seemed to bathe. So, yeah, I guess the characters were pretty much duplicated from what you knew there.
All right, we're going to take a brief commercial break. We have some more questions for you, so don't go away. We're talking to Max Shapiro. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In August, there will be a celebration of the South Point 400, the inaugural South Point 400 at the Las Vegas Motor Speedway on September 16th. Each week from Monday through Thursday, playing 1,300 points gets you a free gift, which is all logo stuff for the South Point 400. And if you pick up all four of them, then you get a tumbler, which is also logo for the South Point 400. In addition, they have a weekend email blast. If you're on their email list and you've played enough, you will get every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in August, you play this much and you get this much of an award. And if you pick up all of them, then at the end you get a bigger, a double amount award. So they do this a few times a year at the South Point. So if you have not given them your email address yet and you're ever in Las Vegas on a weekend, it would be money in the bank if you do. The sixth class in the free video poker series will be Tuesday, August 7th at noon in the Silverado Lounge. The class will be 8-5 bonus poker quick quads. This is a 99.55% game where you pay 6 coins per line, and the extra pay schedule category is 3 of a kind plus the other 2 cards in the hand add up to the rank of the trip, such as 4-4-4-3-ace gets paid as a quick quad for 4-4s, and 8-8-8-4-4 gets paid for 4-8s. There will be one class only on this day, and the class will be taught at the intermediate level. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the game. The game of the week is Face Card Frenzy. You may play this game anywhere from 6 coins to 10 coins, and the odds getting slightly better as you increase your bet. In this game, full houses and quads, including jacks, queens, kings, and aces, return a lot more than usual. To make the math work, all pay schedule categories are bumped up, meaning that you need an entirely new strategy to play this game. In addition, no games in this variety were released returning more than 99%. So it would take one hell of a promotion to make this game worth learning, or perhaps a high theoretical, which would
they all look like that.
All right. We are now back to talking to Max Shapiro, who wrote Read 'em and Laugh for Card Player magazine for more than 20 years. Now, in poker, there's this old expression called read 'em and weep, which is if you have the nuts during showdown time and you want to be a smartass about it, you just spread your card and say read 'em and weep, meaning I got you. Is that the origin of your column name, or is there some other reason you picked the name Read 'em and Laugh?
No, exactly. That was a play on words, and I took read 'em and weep and read 'em and laugh. So, yeah, that's how it came from.
Were any of your characters autobiographical? I mean, you certainly called yourself by name in some of them, but did you write about any characters with a different name that were really you?
Myself, no. When I wrote about me and how Barbara bosses me around and everything, or how inept I was as a player, it was me. There were a number of people who I used real names in a column, but myself, no, not. I didn't use any fictitious names about myself. Just myself.
All right, so in your columns, you were always a very, very bad poker player, and Barbara was the brains in the family. How much of that do you consider actually true, and how much of that was artistic license, something to make the marriage work better?
Well, Barbara's standing right by, so I can't say anything else, but she's a far better player than me. I I'm a recreational player. I've won a couple of poker tournaments, small tournaments, but nothing much. So Barbara describes me as dead money, which might be a slight exaggeration, but I'm certainly not anywhere in her caliber. She's the best and always has been. And I'm just a recreational player.
Well, good. Well, my wife calls me honey, and your wife calls you dead money. So it kind of rhymes. Now, there was a collection of your articles in a Read 'em and Laugh book, at least one. Was there only one, and is it out of print now, or is it still around somewhere?
That was a collection of my early columns that was published a long, long time ago, maybe 15 years ago. It's been out of print for a long time, and I only have a couple issues left, which we'll be glad to send you a copy of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it's been out of print for a long, long time. I did electronic book called The Chimp, The Chump, and The Champ. The chimp being the ape, Big Denny, the champ being Barbara, and the chump being me. It was published by an electronic publishing company called Smashwords, which is available that way. But aside from that, there's been nothing printed other than that really old book.
There were some non-humorous books written by Max Shapiro, but it could have been somebody else. One was called The Penniless Billionaires, and another was called The Mathematical Encyclopedia. Either of those yours, or was it just somebody with the same name?
No, there are a lot of Max Shapiros out there, so those books had nothing to do with me. They may have stolen my name, but no, I have no connection with that, no.
I guess that makes me fortunate. There's relatively few. I have not met anybody else who claims the name Bob Dancer. So, which is good news and bad news. So if Bob Dancer did it, I'm probably guilty. So,
If
somebody wanted to get in touch with you, what would be the best way?
Well, my email address is Read 'em and Laugh, READEN, as in Norman, LAFF, at AOL.com.
Uh-huh. Very good. Read 'em and Laugh. And is there anything else you'd like to tell our listeners before we let you go?
One of the questions you asked me was how they can get to read any of my stuff. Cardplayer.com, the online site, you can read any of the 800 issues. Cardplayer.com, they charge like $3 or $4 a month, but the first 7 days are free, so somebody could go there and find the columns that way. Or, as I say, go to smashwords.com and get the electronic for like 99 cents an issue. For the book I wrote, Jump in the Camp. 99 cents a copy of the book.
Ah, okay. And so you wrote several hundred articles for Card Player. Are they all archived online as far as you know?
Yeah, they're all of the issues of Card Player are available online. So that way, or they can just type in Max Shapiro plus poker, and they'll come up with a online Card Player site listing all of my columns. So either way, either cardplayer.com or Max Shapiro on poker. But all of my columns will be available on Card Player electronically.
And some of them most of them are timeless. The articles that may have been written in the 90s or the 2000s or the 2010s, but the exact date they were written is relatively unimportant. The characters
in
there are Yes, thank you. You were saying?
Yeah, I started to say, yeah, thank you. Before the interview, I was just searching through my old columns, and I got to agree, they were all brilliant and timeless. So I had to, going through them was kind of a treat, because it's been a long time since I've done that, and I was kind of impressed by the veracity and the different issues and everything, and different topics. So thank you for that commendation. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I bet if you read them, even some of them you have forgotten, and if you read them again, it's going to make you laugh. So,
Sure.
Very good.
It's
been a pleasure.
I've forgotten a lot of them, and they all came to mind and going through it. So that was interesting doing that research.
Thank you very much, Max. It was a pleasure talking to you. If you're in town when Barbara comes to a video poker class, you're definitely welcome as well. So
thank you very much. We'll do that. And Barbara gives me notes saying I'll exchange one of my books for one of your books. Okay.
We can work something out. Do you think she's old enough to read Sex, Lies, and Video Poker?
Barely old enough. Okay.
All right. So thank you very much, okay. Max. Thank you, Richard.
It was a great pleasure. Thank you very much. Okay.
Go out and hit royal flushes, everybody. Good day.
Okay. Bye-bye.